Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Who Do You Think You Are? The brand new podcast series by A3 Communications, the data storage industry PR agency. My name is Fred Monson, and I am the founder and principal at A3 Communications. Please forgive the rather deep voice, but I have a sore throat. Today, our guest is none other than rock climber, Porsche driver, and data storage editor extraordinaire, Chris Smeller of Blocks and Files. Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm Fred. I'm embarrassed after that introduction. I'm just a reporter.
Well, Chris, I think lots of people would take issue with that. I think everyone would agree you are much more than a reporter. We have known each other for a long time. I think it's possibly over 20 years now. But I dare say there may be a couple of people, possibly, left in the industry who don't know you. Shall we get started with our questions, Chris?
Do, please.
So why did you become a journalist and how long have you been in this line of work?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've been a journalist for around 30 years or so, and it came about because I'm opinionated and was not a good enough team player in the corporate IT world where I started out, particularly the Santa Cruz operation, where I wanted to express my opinions but could not because they went against company views. So I wrote comment for IT media outlets under a pseudonym.
Was that Jeremy Steele by any chance?
He was one of them. Mike McGee was one of the first ones I worked for. It was all about what I wanted to say from a lowly position in supplier companies. Feeling completely unable to actually affect any change within the companies themselves, but that's a consequence of being down in a low-down position. I found great teamwork in IT journalism and media world because it was full of like-minded people, and that was missing for me in the corporate world. So that's how it all started.
But I thought that normally journalists are supposed to be reporting facts rather than sharing their opinions. Is that not the case? Have you managed to find a boss that actually allows you to report the facts but also share your opinions then?
Yes, I have to agree with that. There's not a great deal of editorialising allowed in the reporting I do, but there's plenty enough sufficient to be able to put across points of view. And one can always write analysis or opinion pieces, especially if you talk to analysts who share your opinions. And of course, my opinions are formed by talking with analysts and other people. So in a sense, I'm reporting on what the industry thinks rather than what I think.
Okay, so looking at where your articles, your analysis get published, you appear in both Blocks and Files and The Register, and not everyone, I believe, is clear on how your role spans both, why some stories get published in one and some in the other. Would you be able to shed some light on that?
Yes, I started Blocks and Files independently and then was bought by Situation Publishing, which owns The Register. I then started writing on Storage Matters for The Register, and Blocks and Files was assimilated into The Register. About 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, The Register and I thought that Storage wasn't getting enough dedicated coverage. So we resurrected the Blocks and Files website and I started working on that and gradually started working full time on that, with some stories getting published in The Register, but the majority of them staying in Blocks and Files. So Blocks and Files is now a site owned by Situation Publishing alongside the main site, The Register, and companion sites such as The Next Platform. And I write more or less full time for Blocks and Files, with some stories going into The Register, but to be honest, not very many.
And who decides which ones go on The Register?
The editorial supervisors, Chris Williams in the US, Nicole Hemsoth in the US, maybe Paul Kunert in the UK.
Thank you. I am sure a lot of people will find that very interesting, because our clients as well at times wonder, why is it so difficult to get in the register? And we do explain that the bulk of your work goes in blocks and files. But thank you so much for finally allowing us to hear it directly from the source. So you write a lot. You often tell me, Fred, I haven't got time to cover something else because I've got a million stories coming my way. What do you think makes you good at your job? Why does everyone want Chris Mellor to write about their news?
First of all, I think the storage industry is quite a wide-ranging one, because it ranges from media like tape drives and NAND flash and disk drives, right up to software that uses storage, specifically data analytics software. So it's an extensive stack. And the amount of money going into storage from venture capital companies has gradually moved up stack over the past few years. And now we have enormous companies like Snowflake, which didn't exist when I started out in the industry. Dremio, Databricks, all the old data warehouse companies. The amount of activity going on in the upper part of the storage stack in the general analytics area is just enormous. And trying to keep track of everything that's going on, from new layers added to 3D NAND SSDs up to new data warehouses being available on AWS, is just an enormous task. And I can't cope. So I've tried separating out stories into standalone stories. Nutanix announced some new results, Pure announced quarterly results, and roundup stories. So-and-so gets hired by Clumio. So-and-so opens a new channel operation. Significant, but minor stories in the extreme of things. But I'm still not able to cope with everything that's going on. It's just an ongoing struggle.
I can imagine. I mean, we have clients sending out press releases all the time. And that's why we often try and get them to you under embargo, because we know that at least we're giving you a little bit more time to work with it and plan it and diarize it. So I feel your pain. So many releases coming your way, offers of briefings, offers to go and see companies in the US. Where do you find the time, and how do you keep on top of industry trends and industry news?
It used to be relatively straightforward, Fred, because a storage supplier would have a PR company such as A3, and press releases would come out. And there was an industry structure for that. Press releases had an industry structure, and they came out to a defined population of journalists, and everything worked relatively straightforwardly. At least that's my memory of rosy-tinged past. But then blogs came along, Twitter came along, LinkedIn came along, and that dratted man Tom Ferenczky wrote that incredible blog about every company is now a media company, some 15 to 20 years ago.
Yes.
And every company believes it. So they've released everybody to be able to blog, to post on LinkedIn, to send Twitter, at least it seems like everybody. And so there's been a loss of control. I'll say control, but you surely must now, say when you're checking out mentions in the media of your clients, you have to check LinkedIn, you have to check Twitter, possibly other social media sites, Facebook, and the various media outlets as well. So your job in trying to keep a handle on the market publicity activities for your clients is as difficult as mine in trying to keep on top of what's actually coming out from your clients. And I can no longer just rely on press releases. I have to check LinkedIn, I have to check Twitter, possibly some other social media sites in the future as well, as well as press releases, as well as getting the odd email direct from suppliers who don't yet have a PR agency. And it's like listening to drums in the jungle. There are different drums, there are different jungles, there are different instruments being played, and you just cannot keep up these days. It's far too much going on.
It certainly is, and I guess, you know, the news wires and the press releases, that's what people want you to know officially. But I guess all the conversations going on LinkedIn and Twitter, that's what you find out that sometimes may even be more interesting than a press release, right?
Oh, indeed. For instance, suppose a CEO leaves in somewhat adverse circumstances. A company may well not issue a press release about that until a new CEO is appointed. Any leadership exec that leaves under somewhat less than positive circumstances is unlikely to get a press release. However, Twitter, LinkedIn, hello, says the post on LinkedIn, I have just joined so-and-so, and there's never been a release about him leaving his previous so-and-so. So that's why it really is necessary to keep a handle on all these different things, to keep a handle on what's going on in the industry.
Absolutely. I agree, because that's also how I often find out that contacts have moved on, that they may have taken on an additional role, both on the vendor, but also on the media side or on the analyst side. Mm. People move around on a regular basis. And if you were to only rely on press releases to find out what is going on in the industry, I think you would be leaving out a significant chunk of it. So we've talked about data storage. I know that you've also written on topics completely separate, for example, cars. But when it comes to technology, to IT, are there any topics that you would like to cover but you've never had a chance to look at, either because they're not relevant to your readers, because you don't have time, or for any other reason?
The general answer to that, Freddie, is no. The reason is because I started in IT after learning to code on tape-based systems, and then as a software support person installing operating systems for DEC mini computers from the first removable disk drives. So I've been occupied with storage in IT ever since I started in the very, very early days. It's my center of gravity, and I'm more than content and happy with that. Outside storage and outside IT in general, I think electricity vehicles and energy generation are the two most interesting topics I'd like to get involved with, if there was ever time to do it, or if I ever had to stop writing about storage.
So over the past, 20, 30 years, since the 50s, the data storage market has changed drastically. I mean, who hasn't seen that picture of that 5 megabyte disk drive, which is the size of a huge wardrobe, being loaded onto an aircraft, right? Yes. So, and I think I read somewhere that the average phone nowadays, mobile phone, has more computing power than the first rocket that was sent into space. So it's mind-boggling what technology has achieved over the past decades. But how would you say the data storage market has changed since you started writing about it? And what do you find most interesting about this technology space in particular?
I think one of the most significant things has been the rise of SSDs. Their cost has come down. Their speed has gone up, their capacity has risen absolutely enormously, and the interface they use has changed from SATA and SAS to PCIe. So the ability to get data from SSDs, from storage drives, has absolutely rocketed both in throughput, in reaction time, and in operation speed. I think the rise of the NVMe interface has also had a radical effect on storage, with external arrays effectively becoming extensions of local storage for servers. Those two things have made other things possible in turn. The whole idea of running analysis off external storage arrays has become far more possible these days, far more efficient. First of all, with parallelization like Hadoop, but then with NVMe SSDs and other things, the ability of the software to use this media technology and make analysis possible over scaled out servers and arrays has become absolutely enormous. Snowflake just wouldn't even be possible unless the hyperscalers had adopted this kind of technology.
I agree. I remember when I was starting out and, you know, fiber channel drives were so impressive. People had no idea what SSD was like. You know, they would ask you about the cost per terabyte, and you were trying to make them understand that at the time, solid state storage was about application acceleration, not terabytes or whatever unit they could store at the time. And there weren't many people following the market, to be honest. I think IDC probably had the largest team at the time. But since then, we've had a number of publications dedicated to data storage. And I think that's fascinating because I was talking to someone yesterday about this. There are still some people who say that the data storage industry and market is boring. And I think you probably are not in it if you think it's boring, because I think it's one of the most exciting technology markets that we have today.
I'm with you there. In one sense, it is boring. It's the third pillar in IT. There's compute, there's networking, and there's storage. And networking has had fabulous technology developments added to that, both local and wide area. Compute has gone ahead in leaps and bounds, and storage has been, well, that's just disk drives and SSDs, and they get a bit faster year by year, and they hold a little bit more data year by year, but basically a drive is a drive is a drive. And I think that's absolute nonsense, because what you can do once you've got significantly faster and significantly more capacious storage drives is incredible. We've got people like Ocient who are analyzing trillion row databases for ad tech and financial services companies, and looking forward to analyzing quadrillion row databases. These are just mind-boggling ideas. You couldn't possibly envisage doing that 10 years ago. And it's storage that's made that possible, as much as increases in networking, as much as increases in compute. Without scale-out storage, these things just would not be possible.
I agree. And I also think that the amount of VC money that's being plowed into the industry, I mean, it wasn't more than a few months ago that we had another $250 million funding round in the industry. That means that there is so much yet to come, because these VCs do shop around and they wouldn't be plowing all this money in the industry if it didn't make sense.
Yes, the direction of VC spend has altered, to my mind, in stories at least, that it's moved away from media, definitely moved away from media, and also moved along from a race upstack towards analytics and storage software. I think that the software-defined storage wave of VC investment has more or less finished. But the analytics wave, the artificial intelligence wave, the data management wave, that's ongoing and going ahead at full bore.
Agreed, absolutely. So looking ahead, Chris, we've taken a good look at the past few decades. Let's look ahead for a moment. What do you think will be the most interesting development in the data storage industry in 2023?
Well, I think, first of all, this Wikibon notion of the supercloud idea, or what NetApp would have called the data fabric. The idea that you could access your stored data, whether it's on premises in a private cloud or in any of the public clouds, and access these three or four or five different repositories as a single logical resource. with management software and analytics software that can work out where your data should be, where it's best placed in the public cloud in terms of access time or cost or tier and so forth. And this is an enormously complex thing to do, but companies like Rubrik and Commvault and NetApp and HPE and Pure and others are all gradually moving towards this idea that you should regard their storage, their data analytics facilities, as things that work on top of a hybrid multi-cloud world, not in a single place anymore. I think ransomware is the second thing that's going to influence file storage particularly. To my mind, the big weakness of file storage is that you have versions. And this is fine to have V1, V2, V3, etc. of a file, but each version overwrites the previous version. So if ransomware can get into a file structure and start encrypting and so forth files, in other words, creating new versions that people can't get at, the old versions have gone away. You can't do that with object storage because object storage has no sense of a version. Each object is unique and inviolable and independent in its own right. And if you read an object, write some data to it, and then write it back to storage, it becomes a new object, a completely new object. The old one is still there if the storage system makes sure that it's there. And the storage system can lock it and make it immutable. And that's the fundamental thing that can defeat ransomware, because as long as you've got your old data up to, say, within seconds of new data coming along, then you can just laugh in the face of ransomware people and say, go away, I'm not paying any ransom, I'll restore my storage from immutable lock, and you can have no effect on me. Scale out, I think, is going to become as important as it already is, if not more so. Because separating out storage from compute means you can scale compute independently from storage. And scaling out storage to huge numbers of nodes and so forth is an incredibly powerful thing to do, because then you can do storage analytic operations in parallel and have enormous speed up in analytics. The hyperscale data stores like Databricks and Snowflake and Ocient and so forth, I think they're going to be doing enormous things in the future. Computational SSDs are going to become, I think, important. ScaleFlux makes a computational SSD, and it can be used with no host software changes at all. The thing just does deduplication and RAID checking and compression at the moment. Mm-hmm. But it's standard, and it can be used to extend the life of an SSD, to make it respond quicker, to make it hold more data. I think these things are going to become so important that standard SSD suppliers will start selling computational SSDs. I think there's likely to be consolidation in the NAND industry. Well, there are three disk drive suppliers, Toshiba, Western Digital, and Seagate, and that's the end result of a decade or two decades of consolidation. There are five or six separate NAND SSD suppliers, SK Hynix and Solidigm, Micron, Western Digital, Cheoxia, Samsung. I think there's enormous scope for some consolidation down to three NAND supplier groups, NAND foundries and SSD groups. But we'll see whether that happens or not, because state interests could get in the way of it happening. RAID cards, I think, are going to change considerably. I think the use of GPUs to do RAID calculations, erasure controlling calculations and other calculations on cards is going to have a huge impact. And a company like Grade doing this, I think, is going to revolutionize the industry. And lastly, the whole data processing unit idea. This notion that when you talk to an external storage array from a server, you need a separate level of compute infrastructure in between called the data processing unit. Intel's there, Pensando with AMD is there. There are other people in the same area, specifically NVIDIA with Bluefield, I think that's going to free up server CPUs from doing repetitive, trivial storage calculations so they can do more application processing. And it's going to make the storage infrastructure faster and more responsive. So what was that? 6 or 7 or 8 separate things that are going to happen or start happening next year? I think it's great.
It's certainly interesting. We should have another chat in 12 months and see which ones of those have actually come true. That would be an interesting conversation.
And which ones have not come true? And that would also be an embarrassing conversation.
Possibly, but we would leave those out. So what about the other end of the scale, Chris? Do you think there are developments coming up which are not going to set the world on fire in the data storage industry next year?
I do. Not quite so many. I think Intel getting out of the Optane business means that storage class memory is now a dead duck. I don't think storage class memory has a real niche in the market. I think that it's going to be rendered completely redundant by the Computer Express Link, CXL, and memory pooling, meaning servers can access to greater amounts of memory across the CXL link than they have physically in their own cabinet. And with that, with the expansion of memory, who needs storage class memory anymore? SSDs will become fast enough and low latency enough and close enough in CXL terms to server that I don't think there's any future for SCM at all, other than in relatively trivial niche applications. So the people producing MRAM or FE-RAM or other versions of ReRAM are going to have, I think, a less than great time of it in the future because the great storage class memory market has just gone. I think DNA storage will remain fascinating, but it's 5 or 10 years away. Because
they're saying, yes, we were talking to a number of vendors and they reckon that there will not be a viable solution based on DNA storage until around 2030.
Yes, yeah. It's the speed. It's the speed of writing and reading data and the size of the device needed for it. This year it's emerged that Seagate's involved in research into lab-on-chip technologies for DNA storage, which is absolutely fascinating. Why Seagate? Well, somebody's got to do it, I suppose, but this is still years and years away. But lastly, I think Web3 storage, this idea of decentralized storage, I don't think that's going to happen in mainstream way at all. It relies on blockchain and cryptocurrency, and cryptocurrencies are having a very, very bad time of it currently, because nobody can see the real reason for them to have any value whatsoever. Blockchain processing is computationally greedy. And why on earth would you want a computational greedy form of storage when you, the whole idea of DPUs is to stop that happening in the first place. It's inherently slow. You're sending your data to hundreds of different little storage pockets scattered around the world and using their spare capacity to store data either in files or in objects. So it's basically, if you and I, for instance, have some spare disk drive capacity, we can sign up as a storage supplier to a Web3 storage system and get paid in cryptocurrency for making our capacity available. But why would we do that in a sensible way? It just seems to me nonsense. Yes, it's cheap. Yes, it gets away from using Google or AWS or Azure, but so what? Most businesses are absolutely content to be using companies like that. They want to use companies like that. There's a single throat to choke. With Web3 storage, there isn't. It's decentralized. There's no central gravity to it at all. There's no controller services like snapshotting or replication or tiering. There's no way you can have archiving on Web3 storage. You can't have spare tape capacity given away to it. There's no way you can have fast access block storage on Web3. It's all slow files or slow objects. I think the thing is inherently self-limiting and being promoted by people who are in love with their technology and its prospects and not really experienced in supplying enterprise class storage to enterprises and public sector organizations that need enterprise class storage. Okay, if you're a university, you need really cheap storage and it's got to be reliable, then Erasure coding and Web3 storage can take care of that. But for everybody else, no thank you. It's just not going to happen. I'm moving into rant mode. I shall stop at this.
No, that's fine, because I can imagine quite a few of our listeners reaching for the phone to try and ring you to change your mind, you know, maybe invite you over to see them and to see their technology in action to try and change your mind, to be honest.
I'd be really happy for that to happen, because part of the fascination of the industry is that it's always developing. There's always fresh things to learn. And if opinions have to be reformed, then so be it. That's great. It's much better to know something's true than have a belief about something that's completely wrong.
I agree. I totally agree. So I know, Chris, that a lot of people invite you over to talk to them, and that you've often been to the US on vendor trips. What makes a good vendor trip if a vendor who's planning to invite you and other journalists over, what should they do to make you think that was a really good use of my time?
Now, this is completely selfish on my part, but I exist professionally to write stories about storage. And they're either news storage, news, or they're technology developments. And if I go on a trip to see a supplier and there is no news and no technology development, then the thing is pointless. They're wasting my time, but I'm wasting their time too, because they've put some people up to talk to me about things which are not relevant. And that is just a waste of everybody's time. So please come up with news or come up with technology developments, and don't forever, please, come up with a report that says there's a problem in the industry and customers can solve it by buying my company's products. God, Lord save us.
Fair enough. So say you've had some news shared with you, you've had access to the right spokespeople, they want to give you something to take away as a reminder of that trip. You know, the usual giveaways that you get given. Have you ever received something that made you think, oh, this is really good or excellent, I'll use this?
Yes, iPods. The AirPods, a set of Apple AirPods. That supplier will forever be in my memory from supplying those wonderful devices. Oh. That was extraordinary. Apart from that, no, thank you. Don't want anything. The reward I get is learning new things and writing about them. And that's tremendously satisfying. Don't need T-shirts, mugs, beanie hat, whatever.
Fair enough. And final question, Chris. So I know you enjoy mountaineering, rock climbing. You enjoy driving your lovely car. But on a regular basis, after a long day, heavy week at work, how do you unwind? How do you relax?
Having dinner with my wife, my life partner, and having an uproariously good time.
Well, that sounds like a very good way to do that, Chris. That's it for this episode of A3 Communications, Who Do You Think You Are? Thank you for joining us today, Chris. Listeners can find Blocks and Files at www.blocksandfiles.com and the list of our podcasts in this series at www.a3communicationspr.com.